Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rainer's Radio, practical training for joint heirs with Christ, with your host, Diane Thomas.
Good evening, and welcome to Rainer's Radio. This is Diane Thomas, your host, and we are looking to conclude our series on challenges to knowing and hearing from God. Last week, we were talking about the challenge of being devoted to God alone and looking to Him alone for encouragement, reward, recognition, and motivation. And we took some time looking at how knowing God and being a spirit being, being a Christian, is primarily a solitary endeavor. And by solitary, I mean us and God. Our relationship with Him is the basis for all other interactions in our life. We don't have interactions with others, whether it's family or spouse, you know, or within a fellowship, you know, religious circumstance or denomination or even work or neighborhood. None of those relationships are supportive. In other words, they don't contribute to our relationship with God. Instead, they flow out of our relationship with God. As we allow Him to heal us and to make us able to receive life in our soul, we then have actually something to offer others besides our own opinion or our own strength, our own ideas. So this idea of fellowshipping and, you know, gathering together to then go to God, it's the other way around. If you aren't bringing God with you when you gather together, you have a priority imbalance. Where do you expect, where do you derive your love, acceptance, value from? I always like to use the illustration of, is your idea of being a Christian, would it work on a if you were stranded alone on a desert island? If nobody else was there, would God be enough? Not saying there wouldn't be loneliness and there wouldn't be trials and tribulations and all kinds of challenges, but they wouldn't be spiritual. They'd be very practical and soulical, but not spiritual. This is part of our issue with, you know, loneliness is just as prevalent in Christian circles as in non-Christian circles. It's because we have warped expectations. We have a warped idea of what it is to know God. And this is one of those challenges of putting that perspective back, that the more we receive His life, the more jealous He becomes. And the less he will allow those other relationships to satisfy us. This is not about the relationship. This is not a reflection on whether it's a good one or a bad one. It's just he wants, he's a jealous God. He wants all of you. And he wants you first. And as we start to respond to that, when we respond an inch, God takes a mile. And we, this is not something that, I mean, we can talk about it and we can give illustrations and some how-tos, but this is really something you have to experience. And when we remember that in our spirit, we are already one with God. Oh my gosh, what are we worried about? What are we trying to obtain? Well, of course, we want to be able to hear him better. We want to be able to have our wounds healed. We want to overcome our flesh. There's all these things that, yes, he wants to do in us. But think about the 99.9999999% of the work has been done. And we're sweating over the 0.00000000001 that we have to work out here on this earth. This is one of the reasons that waiting with calm and rest and just listening and ready to receive just quietly, just extending our hand and saying, okay, Lord, I'm here. Do you have anything you want to say? I'm available. We're not demanding. We're not pushing. We're not even asking. We're placing ourselves in front of him and saying, I'm here. What shall we talk about? And this is often where we find out those wounds that haven't been healed yet. We find out that we have these vulnerabilities that make us vulnerable to our enemies, the world system, our own crutches, our flesh, and the devil and his distractions and interruptions and annoyances. But remember, God could get rid of those in the blink of an eye. Why doesn't he then? Why doesn't he just take care of them? It's because they are there for his purposes. So we, instead of avoiding those challenges, we accept every opportunity, every situation as a potential illumination from God and make the most out of every day. Lord, what's for today? What are we doing today? Now, as we start moving forward, and we're going to start talking about divine guidance and even ministry and practical results of knowing God and how to wait on him. We've talked about that before, but of course we're going to always come back to that. There are things that you can do to accelerate the process. Now, we are living in strange times. God is ready to do some big things, some big ticket items. He has some big things he wants to do. Now, let's settle this first. He is going to do what he wants to do when he wants to do it. He doesn't need our help, our consent, our bowing before him, humbling ourselves. That was all taken care of 2,000 years ago on the cross. All the humbling, all the prayer, all the intercession happened already 2,000 years ago. It doesn't need to be redone. When Jesus died on the cross, he finished the need for qualification. So God is now free to do what he wants to do. And we could talk, maybe we will sometime, about why is there evil in the world? Why is there a Hitler? If God wants to do what he wants to do, or does what he wants to do, why is there a Hitler? Why is there evil? Why is there death? And it's not that there's any enemy that God hasn't created specifically. It's not that an enemy slipped behind his back and got into the garden or into the earth or into his plans. Or that anything happens in this earth or any other that is not his direct intent. He does not have any whoopses. I didn't mean for that to happen. And we have a hard time going, okay, well, God did not, you know, God doesn't hate little, give little cancer to little kids. God is not evil. Well, then where did evil come from? To think that God did not create evil is to claim that there is something as big as God. That God has an equal. And therefore has a limit. And that's not God. Instead, we have to reconsider our definition of evil. And going back to the right hand and the left hand of God, the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And it's fascinating that the tree of knowledge of good and evil, it's the same tree. And then over a couple rows down, there's the tree of life. I want to be focused on the tree of life. Y'all can stand back here and argue about good and evil and what's right and wrong, what's right doctrine. I'm going to go over here and eat of the tree of life. Tree of life pretty much nullifies all this knowledge of good and evil. All that's just the distraction. The tree of life is real. It's life. He is life. Eternal life. So, though there's plenty of times when I'm happy to engage in getting into some of the doctrinal stuff, that's not life. It's knowledge. And I'd much rather get my knowledge from the source and then test it by experience. And if you don't, that's fine. But I'm not going to get distracted from the tree of life because others want to argue about the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And it's not just good and evil. It's about everything. Everything's on that tree of knowledge. we could just as well call it the tree of doctrine. Whose doctrine is right? Right and wrong. Who's right? Who's wrong? Who's good? Who's evil? Who's going to heaven? Who's going to hell? I don't really care. Because our concept of all that pales in comparison to the tree of life. Who is right there? And once you have tasted, taste and see, once you have taken of that tree of life, that's why, you know, in the garden, God had to get rid of, he had to separate Adam and Eve after they had eaten of the knowledge. He had to separate them from life. Because they had to unlearn the knowledge. They had to come to the end of the knowledge before they could receive life. So in our own lives, we often experience that. We have to come to the end of our own attempt at trying to get God to do things or explain things or move on our behalf or respond the way we want him to. We have to come to the end of that. And for each one of us, it's often a unique experience, a breaking experience, and where we just say, God, whatever your life is, I want it. And however you want to give it to me, I accept it. And for some, that life is a life-changing experience. And for others, it's such a gradual change of healing and peace that you don't see it even for years. But he's creeping in and seeping in and loosening the hard hearts and ideas where his roots can take hold. So we focus on the tree of life, God himself, and how he is revealing himself to us now as individuals and for what he has next. But what he has next, if you make yourself available to him and want him, he wants to be wanted. In other words, what are your priorities? What do you value? He will make you the head and not the tail. Not because you deserve it, because of your doctrine is right, but because there is life in you, and that's what he wants to share. So we learn that the Lord is both our reward and our rewarder. So there will likely be evidence of God's work in your life. It's also likely that no one else will ever know all the hard work, the time, the attention, and sacrifice it takes to know God. So we face this conundrum. On the one hand, all we have to do is make ourselves available. And yet what we find out is how hard that is. Because God starts putting his finger on things in our life that we've been trying to keep from him. But he does it through goodness, through revealing himself, through giving you something better first. So we are to count the cost before we start to build the tower. Now, one goal we often have is to, at the end of our lives, be able to say or hear from the Lord, well done, thou good and faithful servant. But if it's at the end of our life, or when we enter before his throne at our death, isn't it late to hear how we're doing? The Lord wants to not only encourage us now, but reward us now as well. These rewards may not be public or even natural rewards, but if we are aware of the Lord's values, we will recognize his abundant and fitting rewards, his trophies, his bonuses, how he acknowledges that we are his, and it is his life flowing through us. Now, these rewards are most often to be kept secret between you and God. And this kind of provides us with another reason not to judge others according to what we see, according to what's going on in the public. That brother or sister you just cut off in front cut in front of in traffic may even be seated at the place of honor at the king's table. Likewise, the Lord may choose you to receive credit for something you didn't take part in or came in at the tail end of. The more we know the Lord, we will accept his recognition when, how, and on behalf of whom he chooses. Today, you and I, we are reaping the great benefit of all who have gone before us. And we likewise have advantages of living in this day and age. Are we to snub the benefits that come from this opportunity? Or simply embrace and appreciate it all the more because we know we are accepting the honor for all involved? When we are given recognition or acknowledgement, can we just say thanks? Or do we have to make sure that everyone knows we're not trying to claim the prize for ourselves? If we know the Lord knows our part and has chosen us for recognition, for whatever reason, to be on the receiving end of the blessings of this present age, drawing attention to our own level of involvement does just that. It draws attention to ourselves. So if through the process of knowing him, God chooses to acknowledge that in some public way, don't back off and say, oh, it's nothing, or it's because of this, because of that. Just say thanks. Try to say, well, it's because of this, because of that. We're talking about ourselves rather than letting him get all the credit by not talking about ourselves. When people want to know God and they can just be around you and have their hunger stirred up, you don't need to explain as much. You don't need to couch what you want to say or put conditions on it or explanations. You can just let God be God. So there's opportunities that are coming that we have no idea how they're going to manifest. One thing we have to recognize is that God is eternally creative. He's always got something up his sleeve, and he's got really long sleeves. So So to think God's going to do something, you know, this is why there's always an issue with saying we want revival. Well, revival refers to something, bringing to life something that was dead. And why would we want to do that? If it's dead, it means it died. It died for a reason. I don't want revival. I want a new thing. And that's what God's going to do. He's going to do a new thing. And one of the reasons he does a new thing is so nobody can figure it out. And what's fascinating is when God does do a new thing, the people who have the hardest time are those who are looking for something else. Even those who love God and long for him to move, if they don't move the way he did in the past, they will rail against it, as it can't be God, because he's not coming a certain way. This is one of our challenges in dealing with scriptures, that if it's not in the scriptures, it can't be from God. And yet the scriptures themselves admit that what is in the scriptures is, shall we say, a drop in the bucket. There's the verse that talks about that if all the books, there would not be enough books that could possibly be written that would describe everything that happened while Jesus was here on this earth. Every miracle he did, every teaching, that there were, could not be enough books. And we know that eye has not seen, nor ear heard, neither has it even entered into our heart or mind what God has in store for those who wait for him and who love him. So the Bible itself, the scriptures itself, promise more than what it delivers. So we look to the author of life, the creator himself. What is he going to do next? And do we want to be in on it? And this is where we look at, as we become available to him, he may want to use you as a conduit. He may give you a total understanding of the secrets of the universe and give you the words to speak life where death has been pronounced. And on, just be open to whatever he has for you. But the purpose being that the times we are entering in and have entered into, they are new things. So be open to new. Be about your Father's business within you, and then be ready for him to do business through you. Finally, remember that all these challenges, these are just descriptions. We all have our own challenges. But the greatest way to overcome these challenges is through confidence. God is committed to your success in learning to depend on him. You already know him in your spirit. But he wants you to know him completely, spirit, soul, and body. So ask him now to give you a fresh hunger for the things of the spirit, the manifestation of his personal presence, to hear his voice, to move in his gifts. And again, trust that this desire could only come from him, and that as you give him the time and attention these things deserve, he will make himself known to you as your guardian, your healer, your teacher, your pastor, your supervisor, your mentor, your encourager, and your example. He is your guarantee of success. So we'll pick it up here next week, same time. You can contact me at Diane@therainersclub.org. Until then, have a great night.